Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, well, we saw Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso win the WWE Tag Team titles at Fastlane Saturday night, and then turn around and defend them 48 hours later, getting a clean win over Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Somehow, storyline-wise, we're supposed to believe, based on the congratulations afterwards, that Jey pinning KO established that KO now trusted Jey. I wasn't quite sure how they connected that dot, but they all stood in the ring together at the end of Raw, and were friends. No, everything went well. It was a fair fight, and the better team won that night. And now the Raw premiere next week is set up with another tag team title defense, with Balor and Priest getting the rematch against Cody and Jey. I thought it was good to have Cody and Jey get a meaningful win over a good team, considering their weak stature as a team going into getting the shot at Fastlane in the first place. Certainly by conventional criteria, they weren't really a deserving tag team, but now getting these wins, two big wins over 72 hours, seems like a good way to establish them. Chris, your thoughts on the tag team title developments from Fastlane through tonight?
Generally, I'm not a fan of two random wrestlers with no connection teaming together and becoming the tag team champions. As a longtime fan of tag team wrestling, I think the match tonight was really needed to establish Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes as a credible tag team, having them beat the team that ended the Usos' long title reign at WrestleMania, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. I agreed with you. I didn't see why Kevin Owens, who's been so skeptical of Jey Uso, was suddenly going to agree with him or be cool with him. I actually was staring at the TV waiting for him to attack him when he came back into the ring, and then all of a sudden they cut off the show. So I'm like, oh, I guess they're all friends now. But because they're a random tag team, because they got the match sort of out of nowhere against Judgment Day, and they're defending against Judgment Day on the season premiere of Monday Night Raw, which is funny to have a season premiere for a show that airs every week, Uso and Rhodes needed to have a win to establish themselves as a credible tag team. And so I understand why they did what they did tonight for that reason.
Match quality-wise, just a straightforward, good tag team match. It went, what did it go, about 20 minutes, if I recall right?
Yeah,
20, 21 minutes. Yeah, and I mean, it was just a good match. You know, they were playing up the idea that Cody and Jey were impressive as a tag team in such a short amount of time when they did some double team moves. I didn't think Cody's super kick looked as good as Jey's, so, you know, doing Jey's move didn't made it look like the super kick is an acquired skill. But overall, your thoughts on the match quality.
Yeah, I thought the match was pretty good. I was worried about how that finish. It looked like it wasn't hit 100%. And I know that WWE has done this sort of, I don't know when they started doing this camera angle where they show it in slow-mo but then speed up the impact so you don't see if there's the move doesn't go as crisply as you would think. My only stickler with some of these matches, tag team, is that, you know, for a good portion of the match, it was just a brawl on the outside. And I know a lot of, you know, people criticize other promotions for that, but, you know, they needed to have a bit more of adherence to rules. But putting that aside, which is one of my main sticking points in wrestling these days, it was a good, fun match. The crowd was into it. They like both teams as babyface teams. So from that standpoint, an enjoyable match.
I also would take issue with the fact that for the second commercial break, there's this chaos going on at the announce desk, and that's when they choose to go to a break. And I'm like, don't cut to a break when it's like really exciting. Give us another minute. Let things settle into that side headlock before you cut to a break. I know that goes against the idea of, you know, we got to end on a, or, you know, break away at a high note so people are really engaged and stick around. But from a logic standpoint, that's like, you know, the NFL cutting away after there's an interception and a guy looks like he might score a touchdown. He's just got to be two people. And they're like, let's go to commercial break. We'll tell you what happens when we get back. The logic isn't there except for, you know, holding viewers through the break.
Yeah, I felt a lot the breaks on Raw are very odd when they happen, even though that they don't even tell you that they're going to break, but if you just hear the cadence of Michael Cole's voice, you know they're going to break. And I think it's just kind of odd. I don't know if it's one of those WWE-isms that they have to do it a certain way because that's just the way that they believe, but it's an odd way to do it, that's for sure.
It is. I mean, you know, the reason they do it is they just don't want to admit that they're going to commercial break, so they say the match continues. Yeah, it's a kind of a weird euphemism. Not a singular word euphemism, but just sort of their way of trying to not draw attention to the fact that, yes, they're cutting away in the middle of a break. The idea of Cody Rhodes being champion, this kind of dates back to Fastlane on Saturday night. I like it because it gives Cody something to do that isn't avoiding major singles matches or spending some intriguing singles matches just to fill time. Now as a tag team with Jay, he can have tag team matches. It gets him back in the mix, so he's not just walking halfway to the ring and talking to the crowd and then walking back. So this is good in the sense that I feel like this can fill Cody's match schedule October, November, December, and January before the Rumble when things probably take a turn. I also really liked Michael Cole bringing up, does this change you wanting to finish your story? We didn't quite get an answer because of a interruption from KO and Sammy, but still, I like that they dropped that out there, kind of it's floating out there. They're not ignoring what fans are thinking, which is, can you win these tag titles and still care about the singles title, you know, that you're trying to, that your dad couldn't win and that you vowed you would. So a couple things I liked about that, about the Cody thing. One, tag titles keeps them occupied. And two, it addressed that Cody still has his eye on the Undisputed title, even if it's going to be a while.
Sorry, mute button. The only thing for me that was odd was Michael Cole asked him the question and Cody was about to respond. And instead of letting him, he just went on and on again, even more just background information for the question that he was asking about Cody not finishing the story. And it was almost, I mean, I've lived through Michael Cole heel announcer and he's not that anymore, but it was very heelish for him to, say, Cody, this means you're not going to be focused after the world title. And then when Cody is about to answer, interrupt him to go, well, your dad didn't win. Maybe he's, that was an ode to Christian Cage watching at home. But it was very odd for me that he just kept going on and on, not letting Cody answer the question.
Yeah, I think Cole was trying to play the hard-hitting journalist, and ask the tough question and do so. But you know, providing that background, but it did get a little wordy. I mean, I think it, you know, served the purpose of trying to, provide some expositionary explanation of the backstory, remind people, it was sort of expository in terms of reminding people of the backstory of Cody. But, yeah, I mean, it maybe the tone was a little gruff.
Yeah. And Cody shouldn't be getting the Rey Mysterio treatment, as in he's a great promo that people want to hear, and you know they did this whole documentary and talking about his story and how he wants to win the title that his dad never won. Though those of us who know Cody Rhodes, he already had a story winning the title that his dad did win, that being the NWA title. But anyway. It just doesn't make sense to keep interrupting him when we all want to, or people do want to hear what if he's going to pursue that. And it's not like in WWE, you haven't had tag team champions wrestle singles matches for singles titles. It's not like he can't do both if that's what he chose to do.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they do not want Cody to talk too much about it because they don't want fans to get too excited about it, but they want to not have it seem as if Cody doesn't care anymore or has moved on. So, I mean, from a technique, and I get why it's sort of aggravating to watch over and over, but the idea is there's these unfortunate interruptions. It's like three or four times now where Cody's about to talk about it and then someone interrupts it. But they literally are, they're trying to figure out, how do we keep it on people's minds but not have Cody get people too worked up about wanting to see it yet, because we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because we're not going to want people to want to see the match until January, because we've got 4 months of TV to fill in the meantime. So in the meantime, yeah, he's – I mean, the Ray treatment was – he can't cut a promo. They didn't trust he could cut a good promo of any length. With Cody, there is a strategy behind it. Let's not get fans too worked up and excited about something we're not going to give them for another half year.
And I understand that. That is a very valid point. It's one of the fallbacks of having all this TV to fill.
Yeah.
You know, 3 hours a week plus SmackDown plus monthly premium live events for 7 months before you get to the big event, as opposed to, you know, how wrestling used to be back in the day. But I think it's a good good way to keep him away from that, something to focus on. Of course, I assume that they were going to win anyway, because I'm assuming he's announcing on NXT the return of the Dusty Rhodes Classic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought
that
would
guess I've heard
make more sense at him doing that as the current tag team champion. But, yeah, he needs to have a reason.
That's a good point, too.
Not to focus on Roman, and also kind of not focus on Seth either, which I know they've kind of had to dance around that as well.
Yeah.
So the tag team titles are a good way of doing that.
Absolutely, yep. All right, well, let's pause. Let's formally introduce ourselves and then move on to phone calls and emails and discussion about more happenings on a relatively newsworthy Raw with a follow-up to Fastlane, some hype for tomorrow night's NXT, the Raw season premiere next week, and Crown Jewel, all in discussion on tonight's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, October 9th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts. This is my first podcast in a few days. I've had some family things going on with my son and his high school play over the weekend, and then I got sick and have just been sleeping and resting all weekend with a fever. And so now I'm talking, and it's like, oh, I don't really have a lot of energy for this. We'll see how long I last and how long it goes. And my brain seems to be working slightly slower than normal as I talk here. So just drawing attention to what could be a below average performance for me here as I analyze the show. So Chris, brace yourself to carry me a little bit. I had to catch up on Fastlane this afternoon. So I've just watched like 6 hours straight of WWE television over the last 7 hours. It's starting to catch up to me a little bit when I probably should be resting. So that said, I still have a lot to say about the show. My report on Raw with analysis is up at pwtorch.com, along with Mauricio Pomerez. So check out his alt perspective report also. I did also just post my Fastlane pay-per-view report with star ratings at pwtorch.com right before Raw went on the air. And you can check that out. And then also check out Brandon LeClaire's in-depth report that he covered live, Fastlane Live Saturday night with tons of analysis too. So hope you're checking out pwtorch.com every day for breaking news and features you won't find anywhere else, including some fun 10 and 20 years ago flashbacks from our deep, deep archives since we've been covering wrestling on the web for 23 years now and covering professional wrestling under the Torch brand for 36 years as of this week. So we've got a lot of cool archives, especially if you go VIP. And then you can dive into our back issues, which is over 1,800 back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Fascinating coverage with star ratings, editorials, long-form insider Torch talks long before there were podcasts. The original and longest-running insider interview series anywhere, the first time wrestling promoters and wrestlers ever talked on record with a behind-the-scenes perspective on pro wrestling prior to the Torch Talk series. It was rare anyone would talk openly about professional wrestling, and certainly not at any length. And when you go VIP, you can dive in and read those archives. Editorials, cover stories, backstage news tidbits, a lot of fun stuff. If you're fascinated with pro wrestling history, there's few ways that you can catch up on 36 years of history. A few better ways, perhaps no better way, than reading our contemporaneous week-by-week coverage of this ever-changing and always fascinating industry. To go VIP, go to pwtorch.com/govip. That includes our new newsletter each week. Also, we continue to publish the newsletter and put it up in PDF and alt-text format for online members. And it includes our ad-free version of pwtorch.com. And it includes a podcast feed compatible with Apple CarPlay and Apple Podcasts and just about every other podcast app out there, including Spotify, with a VIP subscription. You get all our shows that are free with the ads and plugs removed, and then all of our VIP exclusive shows. So tons of reasons to go VIP. It's a great value at $10 a month. PWTorch.com/goVIP for full details. All right. The other voice you've heard so far on the show is Chris Maitland. He is a PW Torch podcaster on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, and he joins me periodically here as co-host after Raw tonight. Chris, welcome. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Tell people about your podcast and how they can, why they should listen and what the subject matter is.
Sure. I host Wrestling Coast to Coast, a Pro Wrestling Torch Dailycast with one of my best friends in the world, Justin McClellans. We talk about an independent wrestling show every week. Usually comes out on Thursdays on the PW Torch website. This week, we actually, yesterday or Sunday, we were in attendance at the Revolver show in Dayton, Ohio, which was the eight-woman tournament that took place, one half of a double event for Pro Wrestling Revolver. So we're going to talk about our live experience there. Justin was also at the Wrestling Revolver show in the evening, so we'll talk about that as well. And yeah, we just talk about a different independent show every week. I think there's been a lot of focus on the indies for various reasons, and the indies are really where tomorrow's stars wrestle today. There are several wrestlers who appeared today on Raw that I watched on the Independence a few years ago. So that's really what Justin and I go over each week, talk about a different show, and do a couple extra matches for VIP listeners. And, yeah, I'm on Twitter at Mind of Maitland, or X, or whatever they call this nowadays. I don't tweet that much, typically about soccer or about Hiroki Goto or Yoshihashi. But, yeah, that's what I do here at The Torch, and I'm happy to be here with you today, Wade.
Yes, the ad-free version of your show is available on our VIP podcast feed, but anyone can listen for free with some ads. Just search PW Torch on your podcast app, and you'll see the DailyCast logo pop up. Subscribe to that. You'll also see our charcoal logo pop up. That's our PW Torch VIP free sample feed with periodic free samples of our VIP shows. And you can also upgrade to full VIP podcast subscription within that app on your iPhone using the Apple Podcast app, using your Apple account. So all you have to do is like tap the side of your phone twice. Boom, you're in. It's that easy. It's as frictionless as it gets to get every version of this show and our full slate of VIP podcasts also. So, yeah, lots of good stuff. Speaking of the indie scene, Chris, and watching wrestlers who end up being stars in the future, we're part of the VIP podcast lineup is throughout the week we run almost every day an 18 years ago podcast from some of our earliest podcasts. We've been doing podcasts for just over 20 years now. And we do on the 18th anniversary of the shows, we post them. And this includes some of the earliest Bruce Mitchell audio shows, Wade Keller Hotlines with tons of insider, fascinating backstage news on during the era of the rise of John Cena, the formation of TNA, early years of Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, all kinds of cool stuff. But it also includes the Real Deal with Pat McNeil podcast every week, where he has the indie show lineup of the week. And it's fascinating listening back to those and hearing some of the names of people who would go on to become big stars and others who are relegated to the whatever happened to file. So yeah, it's so fun listening back to these old shows. I get caught up in doing it. We also have our post pay-per-view roundtables from, of course, since it's 18 years ago, we're marching through the year 2005 right now. And every month we've got our WWE post pay-per-view roundtables too. So heck, go VIP people. Didn't expect to plug VIP so much, but there's so much cool stuff. So don't miss up. All right. Let's give out the email and give out the phone number, and then we'll get to calls and emails. Our email address, if you want to email us, if you're live streaming the show, is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And you can also call us right now, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so we know you want to be on the show, 347-215-8558. We'll be recording the flagship edition of the show this week on Wednesday as opposed to Tuesday or Thursday because Dynamite is airing Tuesday night. And so we'll do a flagship edition running down the big Tuesday night battle between NXT and AEW Dynamite. I'm fascinated by both companies raising the stakes and going all out especially WWE, putting Paul Heyman, John Cena, Cody Rhodes all on that show to try to beat Dynamite. It is NXT's night, but Dynamite, it is AEW's A show, and NXT is WWE's C show. So I expect NXT to win the ratings battle just because they beat them last week on separate nights, and I think they have arguably the stronger lineup for their audience to pop a big rating, but we'll see. I think it'll end up being close, and I'm curious how much each show pulls from the other. We'll have that ratings report on Wednesday, and we'll be talking about it on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship. So search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to this, the Red Logo Show, and also the Blue Logo Show, which is our regular podcast feed. All right, so we're going to move to our first caller of the evening, and that is William in San Diego. William, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Yeah, good to talk to you guys. Thank you for taking the call. So I'm really intrigued right now by what they're doing with Drew, and I really wasn't expecting him to be the first challenger coming after Seth Rollins after that feud he had with Shinsuke. Yeah, what do you guys think about what they're doing with Drew? It seems like they were heading towards a heel direction, but right now, tonight, he seems more face-ish. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, it seems, Chris, like he was heading towards being a heel, and then the last 2 weeks, he's been sort of making his case that, like, I'm not a bad guy. I'm just not going to put myself at risk for other people's business. I'm going to mind my own business. What's your take on his character? What do you think about where he is now? And do you think it's a bit of a change in direction, or you think they always had this in mind?
Maybe he can go as the lone wolf, like Barry Windham, when he didn't join the Horsemen back in the early 90s. But I like the character of he's focused on himself, and he is trying his best to become the world heavyweight champion. I had to make sure I had the title right, and that he's really not concerned with other things. He still has issues with Jey Uso, which I think is going to be highlighted even more if Kevin Owens no longer has issues with Jey Uso. So I think he's being true to himself in the fact that he's someone who is upset that he was wrong before, is now focusing on the title. So they did have the not so subtle in the back moment when he was talking to Rhea Ripley. Ricochet was talking to Adam Pearce about wrestling Nakamura. I'm sure we'll talk more about why that was the case. And in the back, you saw Rhea Ripley talking to Drew McIntyre. So they did have this sort of seed of he may be pretending to be a good guy outwardly, but he's going to make a full-fledged turn when he has the opportunity, just that the opportunity did not come today.
Yeah, I like that Drew is shifting either way, away from the character he had been, which, again, Cody just kind of took that slot in terms of a character on the roster. You know, the pro-company, fan-friendly, earnest, rule follower. And that's what Cody is, and Cody's a fresher version of it and is red hot. Drew, you know, peaked with that character during the Performance Center and Thunderdome era. And then cooled off considerably afterwards. So a change. He's just too talented to not figure out something better to do with him. And so I like this, whether he stays a babyface with an edge or more likely snaps, but he's taken us on the journey with his mindset. So it's believable. It doesn't feel just sudden and arbitrary. But there's an explanation for why he did that. I liked what they did with Shinsuke tonight in commentary, talking about how Shinsuke, or maybe it was during Fastlane. I'm going to conflate the commentary on the two shows since I watched them back to back. That Shinsuke, you know, people were wondering where this Shinsuke was. I guess it was Fastlane. Where this Shinsuke was all these years, and that he tried to fit in and be nice and have fan cheers, but it didn't get him to the top. And then having an attitude and going back to a level of ruthlessness, and they claim, you know, more true to the core of who he is. You create this believable story about why he didn't just turn for the sake of storyline, but that this is who he always was, and he was pretending to be somebody else. And so I'm curious to watch Drew go through this metamorphosis and land somewhere where it's believable. And frankly, I'm buying Drew as somebody with a bit of a chip on his shoulder. I think he kind of has a chip on his shoulder about how things have gone. I don't think he's thrilled that he was the nice guy during COVID and carried things and then was sort of abandoned and, you know, lost to Roman Reigns and then they didn't have good stuff for him and didn't get behind him. And then Cody came in and basically took his spot. So I think there's some meta believability to it, but I appreciate and respect WWE not going all meta on us by having Drew actually complain about Cody getting his spot. That's an inferior way to tell wrestling storylines, and WWE is better than that when it comes to Drew right now. So I'm thankful for that. So far it is working for me. William, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up on that or a new topic.
Yeah, I agree. I really like what they're doing with him, and I'm really getting behind this version of him in a way that I honestly, even at the height of his run when he was, you know, carrying the Thunderdome era, as people say, I never really got into him, but this, you know, this version where he's not trying to pander too much to the audience and kind of doing his thing and having a bit of a chip on his shoulder, as you said. I'm buying more into that. And I guess my question is, do you guys have a preference for, you know, if you were booking, which direction would you taking on? Would you have him fully turn heel or write this new babyface, a newer version of Drew McIntyre as a babyface with an attitude? Because I think this can work in a way that, like I already said, for me, it never did when he was like a, you know, white meat, clean cut.
Do-gooder?
A do-gooder, exactly.
Chris, I'll throw to you first. I'm intrigued by either direction.
Yeah, I think him being a full-fledged heel may be the best for him in this case, only because he was a babyface for so long. I do like the aspect of his character, and this also pertains to Nakamura as well, as someone who does the right thing when everything is working for them, and then as soon as it stops, they have this part of their personality that will have them do the wrong thing because things aren't going for them the way they'd hoped. And there's a story that could be told with him towing this line, maybe losing to Seth Rollins, and, you know, maybe taking him out after the match. I think you don't want to have someone be, I think the notion of tweeners in wrestling has gone too far, you know, he's booed against certain opponents and cheered against certain other ones. I think that confuses the audience. So I think him being a heel after being a babyface for a long time would be really helpful for him, give him some fresh opponents and a fresh way to move forward in his career in the WWE.
The only risk, and I'm with you, I ultimately, you know, would say try to go heel with him. I'm a little concerned that he's going to be the type of heel who fans cheer, because he is going to come across as having an edge and out for himself attitude that he does an effective job justifying along the way. So I hope that they time it out where if he turns, say, on Cody, just for instance, if he's on the same show as Cody and he turns on him, it's possible that could be the end of Cody being relatively universally cheered. If Cody's starting to try some people's patience like occurred in AEW, I'm not predicting that'll happen. I don't think it's inevitable it'll happen. But I think they need to prepare for that as a possibility, that they'll actually do too good of a job with him explaining why he's changing his attitude and his approach, and people will be somewhat sympathetic to it. So anyway, I throw that out there. But an all-out heel Drew – I think just fits best as long as they can tell that story in a way where people actually end up booing it. William, back to you.
Yeah. Good stuff. Moving on to another topic. What do you guys think of the match between Becky and Tegan Nox? I thought it was okay. I thought it was, you know, maybe even good. But I saw a lot of people commenting online that maybe Tegan looked a little nervous or slow, maybe due to her, you know, multiple injuries that she's had over the years on her legs. What do you think of the match, and what do you see as her ceiling moving forward?
Chris, I'll throw to you first on that. What do you think of the match? What do you think of the online chatter?
I wasn't listening to chatter online, but hearing what was said, I think the problem with that match was I don't think anyone thought Tegan Nox was going to win. I think that's a real issue with a match like that is, you know, they did this great story, or they did a great video of her recovery, how she came back. She kind of got a pep talk by Natalya before the match, but it seemed she wrestled kind of tentatively, and the crowd wasn't really behind her. There were a couple near falls where I think people thought she might win because just the way a move was hit and the kick out happened at, you know, 2.8. But I think part of it is really establishing more as someone that the crowd sees as a legitimate contender and then put her in that type of match.
Yeah, it didn't jump out to me as like a great match or a weak showing from Tegan. I thought it was fine. You know, the 2 minutes in, I think they cut to a break, but the announcer said, you know, hey, it's already a good showing for Tegan because people didn't think she could, or Wade Barrett said a lot of people didn't think she could hang with Becky as long as she did. So I thought it was a fine match. I wouldn't pick on it. Nothing jumped out as it's too bad, but I also didn't watch and just think, man, you know, they got their next showcase in-ring act in the women's division at Tegan. Small sample size, but I do think it was sort of sad during ring introductions when Tegan got introduced. There was just, you could hear a pin drop right after her, you know, inspirational vignette aired. I mean, there's some work to be done to get people to cheer her. They needed Pat McAfee to come out and give a passive-aggressive guilt trip to Indianapolis not being loud enough for Tegan also. William, back to you.
Yeah, I guess on a related topic, what do you guys think of Becky as NXT champion for the time being? Because, you know, it seems ever since she turned face, I would go as far back as that when she turned face at SummerSlam when she had that match with Bianca Belair. You know, she obviously went away for a few months due to injury, and then she came back. But ever since, it just feels like she's been kind of meandering a little bit, just, you know, being in long extended feuds that maybe go a little too long or not having much to do. And I like this championship thing, NXT championship thing, as something for her to do in the meantime. And, you know, every time she goes to NXT, she's obviously a big fish in a small pond, and she looks like a star and everything. But, you know, how long can you have her show up on Raw and work, you know, unknown people like Tegan Nox or Xia Li, who showed up tonight, or, you know, Indy Hartwell or whoever, without lowering her star power or name value?
Sure, yeah. Chris, what do you think about how they're using Becky?
I think it's really awkward to have someone of her stature who's not interested in the Raw women's title when it seems that several other people are, and she's instead wrestling for the NXT title. As a one-off, you know, there was a story there for why she wanted to wrestle Tiffany Stratton, and, you know, that's fine, but I agree that long-term, there isn't really much use for her going down that road when you have, you know, all these other women fighting for the, are involved with Rhea Ripley are trying to wrestle to fight for the women's title. I think they, I understand why they put her on NXT to get ratings for a few weeks, but I think it'd probably best to move her on to a different feud, maybe have someone cost her the NXT title that she can feud with on Raw and kind of have her focus there as opposed to kind of going back and forth.
Yeah, I get, you know, they're trying to give a boost to NXT ratings at a time when they're negotiating TV deals and all of that. But I mean, I know Becky's officially a Raw roster member, but having her defending a title that isn't part of Raw just feels like they're watering down the glut of titles, you know, what's growing into a glut of titles that you have to keep track of if you're mainly watching Raw and SmackDown. So I have mixed feelings about it, but it's giving star power and a rub to some of these other women wrestlers. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I would strong veto it, but I have reasons to not think it's a great situation for Raw, for Becky, for women's titles, but it's good for NXT to raise the profile of those belts. But, you know, part of what makes NXT work as a brand is the idea that there's sort of an honor system that, you know, if you have been in championship contention on Raw and SmackDown, you're not booked to just go bully the up-and-comers on NXT out of a title. It I mean, there's not any formal rules, but it just sort of seems like aren't those titles meant for people who haven't already main evented a WrestleMania? And so it's just kind of awkward. And I hope that they get what they want out of this for Becky's sake, for NXT's sake, and then don't go back to this and kind of move on. William, anything else?
Yeah, because one small thing, and then I'll let you guys get to other callers and emails. I know it's a small sample size, but we saw a backstage sit-down interview with the seemingly reunited DIY. When they started the interview, I kind of went, oh, no, a little bit at first with Johnny Gargano going, well, wait, I got some bad news for you. Nah, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God,
and he was kind of going back to that cringy, kind of silly persona that he had when he first came to Raw. But, you know, they went back to talk about their credentials in NXT, kind of letting people know a little bit more about DIY that they might otherwise not know. So, yeah, you know, small sample size, like I mentioned, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, lame dad joke zany DX era. Triple H feels like he's writing Johnny Gargano's lines and also producing his inflection while delivering these lame lines. And I don't think it's really in a well, but it makes sense why with Triple H back in power creatively, less hindered by Vince McMahon these days since the completion of the TKO deal, that, you know, Gargano would get back on TV and start doing something that seems like it would be right up Paul Levesque's alley when it comes to his cringy sense of humor. So I'm with you on being a little on guard with Gargano, who used to be so likable prior to even, you know, the whole thing with Away, where he mastered being annoying but forgot to turn it off when he turned babyface. So I still have those concerns. That said, I think Tommaso Ciampa will mitigate and offset some of that and maybe even steer Gargano away from it, since Ciampa's a pretty cool guy, and they have good chemistry and good history. So I'm happy DIY are back together, and I'm picking on Gargano a little bit, but man, his early run on the main roster has not been a success and hasn't really introduced him to a larger audience effectively. So you'd want to see a little more self-awareness to stay away from that and not lean back into it as if his sense of humor is so irresistible. That how could you possibly want clever lines like that edited out? Chris, what do you think?
There is a possibility here for DIY to maybe show a little bit of depth in their character, because they were there doing the dad jokes and kind of joking around, but then they got attacked by Imperium. So there could be a story, and maybe I'm thinking too far ahead or thinking something that's not going to happen, of now that they've been attacked, now that they have a team to focus on, they will be more serious because of, you know, they attacked them. They had Candice LeRae go to Adam Pearce to check to see if Johnny Gargano was okay. I don't know why she didn't just ask him. I assume she has his phone number. But I guess I have my wife's phone number, so I assume spouses have each other's phone numbers. Maybe different there. But yeah, I think there's a way that they can show that they're different now, because that with Imperium being who they are, they're not going to fall into the hokey jokes. Though they did put up a video, Johnny Gargano did put up a tweet or an X or whatever they call them these days, of him and Tommaso Ciampa playing the Glorious theme song for Robert Roode outside the production meeting. And first walks out Michael Hayes, who's rarely seen these days, and then out comes Bobby Roode. So back to what they used to do back in the day in NXT, a throwback to that. And it's on social media. It's not part of the show, but that doesn't show a really good sign of them not going back to some of the hokiness that they had before.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they keep that off TV and know what's best for them to be popular. William, anything else, any follow-up, any closing words before we move on?
No, I'll let you guys get to other callers and emailers. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Great. Thanks, William. Appreciate it.
Thank you, William.
Our number, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Let your voice be heard. Let us know what you thought of Raw. Push 1 when you call. We'll go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Feels like it's been a while, Kyle. Welcome. What are your thoughts on Raw tonight?
Yeah, so the last call that really what I talked about was Becky and Rhea in terms of the comparison between Becky and Rhea as champions right now. I just feel that, there's been a lot of debate of having Becky as the NXT Women's Champion. I personally love it because really there wasn't nothing for Becky to do throughout the entire this entire year as a kind of like a waste with Becky having her the disappointing feud with Bayley, the not that good of a feud with Trish. So now her being NXT Women's Champion, I personally love it. I think with her having opportunities, giving opportunities to Tegan and Xia Li to have the more TV more to make them. I think what they need to do now is to have them have characters with these women so people can care, and that's what they need to do next with that. But I'm glad that they're actually being shown on TV, so that's a good thing. I think Becky's a better champion than Rhea right now. I think maybe at this point because Rhea, so far as champion, I haven't really been all that excited. She's been pretty much focusing on Judgment Day and being part of the men's division. Her and Raquel was I wasn't all that excited for their match before. And now with Nia and Shayna in the mix, that should be interesting, I guess. But I'm glad they're now doing something with Rhea in the women's championship picture finally, so at least that's a positive. But I just think just comparing the two champions right now between Rhea and Becky, that it seems to me that Becky's more interesting as NXT Women's Champion than Rhea right now. What do you think about the two champions right now currently and how they've been booked so far as champions?
Well, I think Rhea's been really interesting, but it's not because she's champion, and maybe that's what you're getting at, Kyle. I mean, I think her role within Judgment Day and kind of rising to be their leader and being real outspoken and one might even say the architect of that group at this point. Yeah, like that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, if you weren't looking at the logo and listening to commentary, just kind of half watching the show, you'd think Becky was the women's champion of Raw, not Rhea Ripley, because of the way that she's been portrayed at this point. Chris, your thoughts on Ripley and is Becky's title run, I guess, overshadowing Ripley being champion? I bet more Raw viewers would identify Becky as a champion than Ripley right now, if you just asked.
Yeah, I agree, because Rhea isn't really being identified with the belt. I mean, she has it in her possession. You see her with it, but she's focused on Judgment Day stuff, which is not involved in the women's matches. You know, she did attack Nia Jax and Raquel Rodriguez, and now ends up with the match with Shayna Baszler, but it's not like she put the title on the line. She just wants to fight her more because Baszler attacked her, while Becky Lynch is going on TV defending her titles, having matches set up for other titles, watching matches set up for her future defenses, or having other people challenge her. And I think, yeah, she does stand out in that regard, because Rhea Ripley is almost like the head coach who is also the general manager, who like doesn't do any scouting during the season because they're focused on coaching, and then they have to catch up in the other part of the year. Like Rhea Ripley is so focused on being the leader of the Judgment Day, and the Judgment Day trying to get back the tag team titles, and as well trying to figure out a way for Damian Priest to cash in his Money in the Bank, that she's not focused on her title. But also part of it in wrestling now, people are calling people out left and right for championships to get an opportunity to fight for them, and no one's doing that either. So that's also kind of odd.
Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, I just think it's, and I think also kind of a little bit of a shame, because I really like Rhea. I think she's really good in her heel role, and I really do enjoy her in Judgment Day. But at this point, you know, it's like you gave her the championship. I thought they would give her more of a singles role. I mean, yes, she's still part of Judgment, that's fine, but you could see her more in the women's division, and hopefully now they could start that. So we'll see what happens moving forward with this four way that they're going that they set up here, so that should be interesting. So we'll see, but still enjoying Becky more because he is more interesting and important. So that's, I think I want to talk about the the Shinsuke and Ricochet beatdown and mini feud that they're doing to kind of start it, but they kind of thought that Shinsuke was focused on Rollins, and now with this feud now between Shinsuke and Ricochet for next week for their False Count Anywhere match should be entertaining, should be fun. I think also too, what I've realized too about Shinsuke is that he's more entertaining in like involving matches when he's in stipulation matches, because with any type of match he had, like when he faced Rollins before at Payback last year, was really just disappointing. And so I didn't think he just works well better in stipulation matches. I don't know why, but I'm looking forward to that. What do you think for Shinsuke moving forward, though? How is he? What do you think is next for him moving forward after his two losses against Rollins? And how do you think this feud with Ricochet is going to make him feel more credible as a heel character? And what do you think about that dynamic?
Yeah, so I think because Shinsuke, one, he got revitalized by being a heel after just kind of being lost in the mix. So I think he comes out of the feud with Seth, even having come up short winning the title, in a better position, and his heel character is well established now. I think pivoting from him coming up short against Seth in an unexpected feud with an unexpected level of intrigue and credibility and frankly match quality is good. And I like that they interviewed him and said, you know, how are you feeling after coming up short? And of course, you know, Nakamura didn't have much to say. And then before I had a chance to really gather his thoughts and say anything, Ricochet attacked him. They planted the seeds for that, and it gives Shinsuke something to do right away. And it makes sense. You know, he's already made it to the top. That might be his last pay-per-view match, of his main event of his career. And now it's time to move on and move down the card, and he is. And they gave him something to do right away. I'm more a fan of that than when a challenger loses a world title match and they just disappear for 2 weeks or a month and a half, and then they just come back and act like nothing ever happened. I like that they owned the outcome of the match at Fastlane. And had Seth celebrate and then Nakamura pivot to something else. Chris, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you're always concerned about someone in the situation Nakamura was, where he was kind of in the middle of the card, kind of foisted into the main event, I think just out of necessity because there's no one else. And you think, one, he's not going to win the title, and two, what's going to happen to him after he loses not only the first match but two pay-per-view matches. So it actually was happy to see him come out and, one, have an interview. Obviously, he didn't say anything. And then, two, attack Ricochet, because it shows that he wasn't just someone that they heated up for 2 months just so they could have someone wrestle Seth Rollins to lose and that they're forgetting about. I think it's good to maintain that heel momentum. Wrestling someone like Ricochet, who is a spectacular wrestler and a babyface, so that people can still get behind booing Nakamura, so I'm glad that they gave him something. I wasn't aware before I started watching the show that next week's Raw was the season premiere, so I was surprised to see a lot of these matches happening so quickly. This is one that maybe you could maybe do in a few weeks with a bit more of a build-up, but because it is the season premiere, they're going straight to it next week, but at least it gives Nakamura something to do and putting him in some semblance of spotlight, not completely forgetting about him after his matches with Seth Rollins.
All right, Doc, Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, and I think I wanted to get to, like, Damian Priest. I've been really I like Priest, what he's doing, trying to – when he came out to almost went and bought the cash in, and I thought it was also funny that Priest just got flued out of the raid and hit the board. So that was funny. It reminded me of when Drew McIntyre did that too with Miz as well. So that was funny too. But I'm looking forward to this thing you kind of mentioned earlier about Drew and his heel turn. Is I'm looking forward to that too, because I think, you know, I think what makes McIntyre interesting is when he's more aggressive and more angry. There's more, and it makes his character more feel more interesting to watch, because now he's been a babyface for so long that I forget how interesting he is. So now being a heel, facing Rollins for hopefully a couple of times, I think also too, I would actually prefer McIntyre take the title from Rollins. It would be McIntyre Priest for me, take the title from Rollins at this point. So if that's the direction, I like it. I think also too, just this heel persona from Drew, with fans now being there too. It's going to be a cool scene for him as a champion heel with fans there. So if that's a direction, I like it, whatever. And so what do you think though, moving forward in terms of, well, I guess you already mentioned it, but about this, I guess with Priest now, it feels like he's like a pawn or just being like doing the thing where you're Mr. Money in the Bank, where you're just there, but not, but being like a lap dog, but that's the initial call.
Thanks, Kyle. I like what they're doing with Priest, even if I don't know the landing place and the timeline of him pivoting into something else other than being part of the Judgment Day. The fact that Rhea and Drew were chatting in the background, which is a Paul Levesque special, during a segment on this show, you know, it's crossed my mind, you know, what if Drew ends up joining Judgment Day and Damian Priest ends up turning babyface and breaking from Judgment Day, and we get, you know, one of the feuds we get eventually, perhaps Drew beats Seth for the title and then Priest, or maybe, yeah, I mean, all kinds of ways it could go. Maybe Priest cashes in, but then turns babyface afterwards and then defends against Drew. Various approaches they can take to this. But I think Priest can work as a babyface. I think he's acting in a way that feels to the viewer as if when he's upset or what tactics he's using don't come across as sinister or unforgivable and relatable and understandable in the midst of everything going on in Judgment Day. Chris, talk about your thoughts on Damian Priest and his landing place, and also just what do you think of the possibility of would it make sense for Drew to join Judgment Day and take Priest's place as sort of an outside possibility?
Like, I don't think it would help Drew to join Judgment Day because he would not be in the number one spot there in Judgment Day because that has worked before as Rhea Ripley, so that really wouldn't make sense for him. With Priest, it's been, you know, I know people said they're trying to mirror the Judgment Day storyline with the Bloodline, but there are some weeks, a few weeks ago, where it looked like he was definitely the heel and he was going to kick out Finn Balor for not winning, and in a similar way that the tag team titles were able to distract Cody Rhodes from his finishing the story, the tag team titles were able to kind of keep the Judgment Day together and not focus as much on the world title, even though Priest had the Money in the Bank. Now that they've lost it, pending a match next week, that puts the focus back on him. I think Priest can be a very good babyface. I thought with all the matches they did with Bad Bunny when they wrestled Miz and Morrison a few years ago on WrestleMania was to set him up to be a huge babyface, but they turned around on him on that. I think for him to be a babyface now, they need to definitely have him separate from the Judgment Day in a way that makes sense to keep his cool factor, not that, you know, he loses a match or he doesn't get the cash in and they jump him. And then it's like, well, you're not someone we can get behind because you were the guy that got kicked out. So you have to be very careful with how, if they decide to have him be a singles babyface, how he gets there.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing. I think he's capable of it. I'm a fan of his for a long time. Punishment Martinez and Ring of Honor before, but I think they have to make sure that they set him up in a way where he can prosper if he does turn.
Yeah, no, really good point. Really good point. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call if you want to be part of the show. Push 1 when you call, as Brad from Florida has done. Brad, welcome to the show. What are your thoughts on Raw tonight?
Hey, I missed a second of Kyle's call. Did he bring up that Drew Rhea conversation that was happening in the background? Did he just allude to that?
I did after Kyle stopped talking.
My bad.
After
okay,
question,
cool.
I brought it up. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, but
yeah,
it did get brought up. Yeah.
My bad.
Kyle and I sound alike. I
forget. Yeah, nah. A little bit. Kyle's a great guy. I was curious about, first of all, I brought this up to you about 10 times, but what a pain in the ass it must be for Cody to carry around both of those belts. I mean, Jay is probably used to it. You know, he's been doing it a long time, but it's so annoying. Like, what do you think they're ever going to get rid of both of these belts? Like, why do they still have two? I do not understand. I mean, I said this to you maybe 7 months ago, but I don't understand it, guys.
I'm not a fan of it either. I mean, if you unify the belts, there should be one belt, you know, for each tag team wrestler, and same thing with the Universal Unified, whatever Roman's belt is called these days with all the superlatives. I don't get why they created a new belt and then kept the other ones around. It just seems kind of silly. It's sort of a boxing thing, I guess, a belt collector thing. It feels like a rib on Kenny Omega or something, but he's not really on their radar, so it isn't. But, yeah, I don't know. Chris, what do you think? Do you like the extra bling, the extra gold, the extra hardware?
The only positive to it is for at least the last 20 years, I think, when Eric Bischoff gave Triple H the World Heavyweight title, WWE has had these issues where they consolidate titles and they bring them back together and they create new ones out of thin air. So maybe they're keeping them separate because they think maybe one day we'll have separate tag team champions again.
Yes, yep.
And we'll just split the belts as opposed to, the champions currently are on Raw, so we're going to have a SmackDown 8-team tournament. So that's the only benefit, is that if they split them again at some point, they can just split the titles up and not have to do a tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you can have you could have one belt defended and not the other, I guess. But you could still do that even if they were carrying around one belt and then just...
Yeah, that's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, it's a hopeful theory. I'll put it that way. Brad, what else?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Like, speaking of boxing, like, this sport being so... I don't know what the right word is. Like, just so much... I'm trying to even grasp the right word. I can't. But, like, you know, it's funny. Like, sometimes the ring announcer will announce, the man, Becky Lynch. And sometimes... But, like, I feel like they should do that for everyone. Like, no, the Scottish Warrior, Drew McIntyre. Like, it shouldn't just be Drew McIntyre. Like, it shouldn't be just, you know... Damian Priest. It should be Senor Money in the Bank. It should be, you know, whatever their nickname is at the time. Every time they really should get into that more. And I don't know, your boxing comment just kind of jarred me to say that. But do you? Yeah.
Justin Roberts agrees with you on that one. I think Paul Levesque's approach, based on reading Justin Roberts' book and listening to Mike Rome especially, is you know, don't draw attention to yourself. You know, certain people get certain inflections, but don't turn it into a shtick. Don't turn it into a gimmick or a thing, and don't draw undue attention to everybody. You know, we're going to pronounce it, I guess, a certain specific way so that when we do it, it stands out. I don't have, you know, super strong feelings on it, but I think that's kind of maybe why, or else they just haven't thought about it at all. Chris, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think... They hit you over the head with the nicknames pretty often with WWE. They have them on the shirts. They say them a lot. I do like, you know, I'm a fan of boxing, so I do like the introductions, but they don't do them for everyone special anyway, so they won't stand out because they really do the special ones for the title matches. But, yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal in my opinion.
Brad, what else for us?
No, guys.
You're going to Collecticon.
I don't know if you touched
up.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know if you touched upon this earlier, but the Ludwig Kaiser.
You know, we should be your priority, Brad. You should listen to us first from the beginning, not these other things.
Wait. I listen to every single show, post show, start to finish.
That's
why
I feel
do.
Like.
So you have to know that. You have to know that.
Yeah.
The Ludwig Kaiser vignette. If you touched upon it, if you did, you know, feel free to move on.
No.
But
no.
What do you think that's about? And here's what I just want to say. Like, Giovanni Vinci has been one of maybe the biggest loser in all of WWE. I mean, he has been, and I know, look, you're not a wins and losses guy. I know that. And, like, I'm really not either. I don't think it matters that much. But at the end of the day, like, I don't think he's won one match since he's come out. I mean, literally his record might be 0-42 or something like that. It really might be. And what is this Ludwig Kaiser solo thing about? Like, do you think he eventually, I mean, it's certainly not a babyface promo. It's arrogant. It's hilarious. It's, you know, showing how, you know, elegant and opulent he is. And it's pretty funny, but I don't know. Like, what do you guys make of that? And where does that potentially lead? And what about Giovanni Vinci? Like, do you guys think this is the end for Vinci, or Vinci goes babyface, or like, what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I was. It was. I don't think that was a babyface vignette. It was him acting, Ludwig Kaiser acting full of himself. It is feels a little premature when they're attacking as a tag team DIY to then be featuring Kaiser separately from Vinci. So it's I'm kind of, you know, tilting my head, going, what's going on here? Before the attack on DIY and just sort of in general, I mean, they have been protecting Kaiser more. And they think much more highly of him. I think they ought to. Vinci is fine, but Kaiser jumps out to me as the more charismatic, talented star worth investing in. And it's not anything against Vinci, just relative to Kaiser. He stands out. And this I'm a work of art and comparing himself to various works of art, I think it's actually an approach that has some traction to it. It's very WWE-like to, you know, hone in on a quality about him and then, you know, as Wade Barrett said, I would love to have his cheekbones and his abs. I don't think they're worried about Vinci. I just don't think he's not even on their mind as a priority. But clearly Kaiser is, and I don't know how this fits into what's going on with Gunther and Imperium overall. I wish I had a better answer, because it does feel a little out of order to suddenly be featuring a vignette on someone who's established on the show, but and as part of a faction, but as part of a tag team. I've never seen an individual vignette done in that context. Chris, how about you?
Yeah, the Kaiser video wasn't a video of someone that you've done that's been on the show for several months. This is a video that you do when you've never seen him before, or he was... Yeah, I'm trying to think, not exactly like him, but like when Rick Martel became the model and he suddenly had a different persona than he had a few weeks ago, and so you showed that he's changed. It was a very interesting vignette. It was really funny, but it wasn't enough of a different take on his character. It just seemed kind of random and out of place to the show. And again, they did Imperium, did attack DIY. I can't remember if that aired before or after this video. So... it's interesting. I mean, obviously, it shows that WWE sees potential in him and wants to push him maybe a little bit further, but it just didn't make sense in the context. It wasn't really anything new entirely. It was more just, you know, ha, isn't that funny that he doesn't like – he sanitizes his hands and he, you know, will take a picture with your girlfriend and leave you angry.
By the way, Vinci has been part of 4 victories this year, all in tag teams, 2 of them against Alpha Academy, 1 against the OC, and 1 against Cruz and the other guy in Joaquin Wilde. So that lots of matches this year and 4 wins. I don't know if Vinci's ever had a singles win, but I didn't look that far back on the record, thanks to cagematch.net for that database. Brad, back to you.
Yeah, and I also doubt he's ever been the one who pinned someone for a win. It's always been Ludwig. So, I don't know. Whatever. Giovanni Vinci had such a great gimmick in NXT. I'd love to see him go back to it. I thought it was utterly hilarious, and he was such a different guy. But, whatever.
There's hope because of that. You know, that once, you know, Imperium, you know, splits and Kaiser goes his own way, maybe they repackage him.
Yeah. And you guys think that Sami Zayn's music being the bad guy, Sami Zayn's music was a mistake, right? That was just a mistake, correct? Or was it foreshadowing for something else?
That's a good question. I mean, Sami reacted like it was kind of a mistake. Like, I haven't heard that in a while, but that's all right, I guess. He seemed a little irritated by it. It could have been a mistake, could have been a rib, could have been a way to just send a signal to the fans that that they were going to kind of play the role of the heels in that match, be on the heel spot and the heel corner for the match. And, you know, I mean, it was played pretty straightforward. It wasn't like KO and Sammy were heels and they all stood together at the end. So I don't really know what that was about. I'll ask around a little bit. Chris, did that jump out to you at all? Do you have a theory?
Well, I think the last time I appeared with you, Wade, was the collision with the Keith Lee take 22. So I think that, they know in wrestling that I'm doing the post show with you, and they want to do production miscues. So
yeah.
We talk about them. That to me is my theory.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the announcers drew attention to it, so who knows?
Yeah, they didn't. And actually, Sami Zayn made a joke about it, which to me in WWE, when they try to do long-term seeds, they don't mention it. So I
right,
think it's
yeah.
just a mistake.
Yep. Cool. Brad, anything else for us?
Are you guys both watching NXT tomorrow night?
I'll be covering Dynamite and doing the post show on it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I said I don't normally watch NXT, and typically we record on Wednesdays, Wrestling Coast to Coast. So it depends how I feel after the kids go to bed.
There you go.
I got you, man.
I mean, I'll catch all up right. on NXT. You know, by the time I do the flagship on Wednesday. But yeah, I'll be covering Dynamite. I got to pick one show or the other to watch and dedicate myself to watching just one. And the NXT, PWT Talks NXT crew certainly have their beat in their territory staked out. So they'll be doing the daily cast on it. So we'll have two post shows going on live head to head tomorrow night, the NXT one and ours and the Dynamite one here.
I'm just wondering what Cody's announcement's going to be. His big announcement. I just can't. I don't know. Maybe it's the Dusty Classic, but if it's I don't know if it's that, it's a little too predictable. So we'll see. Hey, have a good night, guys. Great. Thank you so much. Great to talk to you both.
Sure. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you as always.
Thank you.
Our number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call, and when you do, push 1 on your keypad so that we know that you want to be brought onto the show. All right, we will go next to area code 732. 732, thanks for calling. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. All right, some feedback there. Give us a call back if you have a better connection for us. All right, we'll go to an email here. JB says, JB from Detroit, I should clarify, says the way that Seth Rollins came out and mentioned that his back was still very much broken, but then quickly laughed it off and said he was just getting started was still going to be your fighting champion, really made it seem as though the back angle was purely a storytelling device to make the Shinsuke feud seem more meaningful, which actually diminished it for me. Then to top it off, Rollins in an over-the-top grating way and battle him, which I really can't take much more of, feels more like a disingenuous cartoon than at any point during his run. I understand that I might be in the minority in my feelings here, but I actually find the current edgy Drew to be more likable. The tease of I'm going to retire followed by, ha ha, I'm just getting started. It's an emotion that they go for too often, kind of the swerve culture thing that WWE especially has, but it's permeated other places. Thank you, Mark Henry. And it's overdone. I understand why they do it. I don't understand why they don't resist doing it, because it's so played out and feels rather manipulative and honestly just pointless, other than that ephemeral gotcha moment. I didn't think this was Seth's biggest moment. That said, I didn't mind him kind of – it's a little subversive, you know, just go, can I just have 1 week to just not have anyone jump me and be – and just celebrate my win and then, you know, have Drew come out and not jump in, but then still be jumped. Chris, what do you think of Seth's promo?
Yeah, I'm not as big a fan of the Seth Rollins character as a lot of other people are, though he gets a great reaction from the crowd. I thought if you really wanted to make sure that no one jumped you, you probably shouldn't have come out on Raw. Maybe you should have stayed home. Obviously, in wrestling, they've had people break into people's homes, but highly unlikely that would happen. I agree with the statement. I don't think he should minimize the toll of the match, or I don't think he should tease the retirement a la Mark Henry some 11 years ago. The reason why the Mark Henry thing worked is that everyone thought he was gonna retire. It wasn't just he came out there. They had vignettes of him hugging wrestlers, and they had a lot of social media presence about it, and they built it up. This is just a statement for him. And also, his character is someone who says wacky things and does wacky actions. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for him just to say something, just to say it. I thought the promo was fine. You know, obviously they needed a way to transition to Drew McIntyre. And because Drew's try at least still be a babyface at some point. It worked in with what Rollins said about no one would attack him because Drew just came out to challenge him for Crown Jewel. But, I thought the promo was all right.
Well, to get to JB's point that I kind of brushed over, I get one aspect of JB's point, which is it does sort of say, yeah, that whole thing about my back was just a storyline for the Shinsuke feud, but I'm just getting started. Like, wasn't the story he's not just getting started, that he actually is vulnerable? Didn't he validate that as a babyface character who should be telling the truth to the fans, not lying to enhance through, you know, just fiction and embellishment, that his back was really putting him at risk and he might never see it? He needs to be worried about being able to, you know, play with his kids and be with his wife and be a functional adult. For him to just go, I'm just getting started, does undercut the sense of genuineness about what fans were told to be invested in the last 2 months. Seth never denied he had a back injury when Shinsuke said he had one. He totally played it up. So his comments tonight did sort of seem to disrespect the emotions fans allowed themselves to have in fear that his weak back was going to lead to a premature end to his career. And whether it's real or not is sort of beside the point. Don't get hung up on that. What I'm saying is, from a narrative standpoint, it's incongruent for Seth to play up, yeah, my back is sore, and then win, and then come out 2 days later and go, I'm just getting started. That completely goes against everything we've been told for 2 months.
Though he did also say, and it's kind of an issue with Seth Rollins, because his character is that he's a wacky guy, he did also say, oh, I hope no one attacks me. And so part of it for me was, is he saying this because he wants to pretend now that that match is over that he's not as hurt, because it's just like he says crazy, not crazy things, but he says things that are nonsensical or are over the top.
But the stuff about his back was actually him breaking character. That was him saying, you know, I mean, he brought his family and his kids into it, and, you know, emotional sound bites from him. To me, for him to go to be like, yeah, I drew you in to this story we told that my back was vulnerable when Nakamura brought it up, that was just to create a sense of jeopardy that maybe I'd lose the title and have to retire. But now, swerve, haha, now I'm just getting started. That was all just for fun. Like, I don't think that's him being that's him being wacky now, but he's being wacky about something that they actually did an effective job getting fans concerned about the last 2 months. I think that's where JB's coming from.
Yeah, and I get that. I understand that. I definitely see from that perspective. I just think for most fans see the feuds in a vacuum, and so that was an aspect of his feud with Nakamura, and his feud with Drew McIntyre is not going to be about his back, so we're not going to talk about it. We're just going to pretend that didn't happen and move on to whatever the reason him and McIntyre are feuding.
I guess I would have rather had Seth come out and say, you know, I survived. I'm glad to be standing here. It was a brutal match. But despite my ongoing back pain and concerns about it, I feel like I am rejuvenated by surviving Shinsuke Nakamura, who's focused on my back more than anyone else. And I feel like my story hasn't been written yet. I mean, he shouldn't steal Cody's line, but, I would have stayed away from him just getting started and eased us away from his back being a central thing about his in-ring character's abilities.
I agree.
Oh, right. Yeah.
No, I'm saying I agree.
Yeah. Number two from JB. Vikings rules match might be the dumbest match stipulation of all time. I guarantee it's not. Just call it a hardcore match rather than a match filled with a bunch of weapons that looked more like discount costume props from Spirit Halloween. I mean, I don't think it's the dumbest match tip ever, but it is just, you know, it's sort of like whatever city you're in, it's that street fight. You know, whoever your opponents are, hardcore match can sometimes take on the name of those wrestlers. I don't have a problem with it. At least we didn't get any augmented reality Viking ships or anything this time. Chris, what do you think?
So for me, I thought a Vikings rules match was you won the match by getting Kirk Cousins to throw an interception, but that was not the case on the show. It was just a regular hardcore match. I don't understand the...
I am not selling that.
I'm not a fan of Kirk Cousins for reasons I won't get on now. But for me, it just means very odd for, like, the babyface to enter into a match against the heel where the heel has developed the rules, and so he's put himself at a disadvantage. It was just a regular hardcore match for crazy symbols, so it was fine. But, yeah, the Vikings rules were just a ridiculous name just because, you know, the Viking, one half of the Viking Raiders in the match, and they didn't want to call it a hardcore match or a weapons match.
GB also says, does it diminish Cody finishing the story to win another belt before he wins the Undisputed title? My answer is no. I mean, we know in a meta sense they're going to save it for WrestleMania. And the Cody J match just sort of happened. They got the win. You know, it's awkward, but I wouldn't say it's diminishing. You know, I think Cody can talk about, you know, being proud to be a tag team champion, and tag titles mean a lot, and tag teams are, he's had a lot of partners over the years, and he feels especially proud to have won a title with Jay, who he, you know, wanted to give a second chance to, and kind of, you know, retell the story of why he's sympathetic to Jay, and it'll be an honor to defend the titles. But, you know, he didn't get quite around to saying he doesn't, it might delay going after the finishing his story, but it doesn't mean that it's not still important to him and on his radar. I mean, there might have been an artful way to kind of address that and dot the I and cross the T a little bit. Chris, what do you think?
I think it's better to have him as a tag team champion and tag team feuds than wrestling singles matches, because that to me is too close to his ultimate goal, which is winning the main singles championship currently held by Roman Reigns. So I think this is a better way to give him a distraction. It also is not, it's not like he won the Intercontinental title or the U.S. title or the NXT title that people can say that doesn't compare. It's the tag team titles. It's completely different. They actually had a flimsy but storyline reason for why he teamed with Jey Uso. They'll probably have a reason for why they, when they lose the belts, and that might give him another maybe 2 month singles feud to take time with before he gets to the WrestleMania main event. So, yeah, I think it's a good way to kind of keep a focus on him, but not bring up the main, his main goal.
JB also brings up this. If they're going to bring in the DIY from NXT lore, don't they have to address the entirety of that lore? They can't just pick and choose. This should include their breakup and multi-year feud. I could be mistaken, but I believe that their feud actually lasted longer than the tag team did while in NXT. The last time we saw them in NXT was basically one of the biggest blood feuds in NXT history. It seems like a WWE attempt to have their cake while having eaten it too. I think that's a fair criticism. It's not a detail that Vince McMahon has typically felt was important to his success, but it's one of those things you would hope that Paul Levesque would care about enough to address. Now, I still think there's room for that. I think you could have a interviewer, Jackie Redmond, can ask a tough question and say, hey, the last time we saw you guys, you were fighting each other. What happened? And have a halfway decent explanation for it. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought that this interview today could have been an example or a way to actually deal with that. Just mention, you know, we were a great tag team. We had a falling out. We had our wars. But, you know, time healed all wounds. We got together. We realized we needed each other. And now we're going to go back to what we used to do back in the day. They weren't a tag team that just magically split. They had a really bitter blood feud. So at least address, you know, because people can kind of understand, oh, they were really close friends. They fell out for a while, but they got back together. But at least give some sort of lip service to that as opposed to just pretending it didn't happen at all.
All right. Then he also says, the girl with the shiniest wizard is a terrible nickname for a female wrestler. For one, using the term girl seems to diminish Tegan Nox right out of the gate. No male wrestler is referred to as a boy, except for maybe Dom, but that's intentional for further heat. Secondly, I don't think that shiniest wizard is a common enough wrestling term to really resonate with the general audience. Yeah, I mean, I get that. You know, girl in a colloquial sense is used in a different way than boy is. And, you know, it has historical ramifications. I remember Bob Barker in the early 80s when he had his producer leaving the show, and he mentioned how, you know, loyal she was to the show and how great it was to work with her. And he said that, you know, she on her way that one of the things she got him to do. This is the old Price is Right host who just died, and a WWE Hall of Famer in the Celebrity Hall of Fame wing. And he said, this was back in the early 80s, she taught me not to refer to male humans as men and female adult humans as girls. They should be referred to as women. And, it, you know, I mean, most of us have largely come around to understand the historical reasons that it's diminishing to refer to an adult as a girl, but not adults as boys, or as when we refer to other adults as men. So I get that, and it's something, you know, you want to be cognizant of, but in the context of a nickname that's sort of trying to be a little irreverent, if we take that out of it, you know, the historical diminishing of women by men to make them seem less than when it comes to equal pay and equal job opportunities and all that, if we subtract that, and it's hard to do that, and I don't think we should, but if we do, maybe there's an excuse for it other than it's still dumb in the sense that one of my favorite Todd Martin rants was ranting against the arrogance of Tegan Nox declaring that she has the shiniest wizard of them all. You know, who is she to say that when many people have shining wizards? So it's multi-pronged, controversial topic, but some I think some pertinence to it too when it comes to the judgment of going with that. Chris, what do you think?
I mean, the shining wizard is a knee to the head. So are they saying that her knee to the head, you know, gives out the most concussions or brain trauma? It's just a weird,
yes,
weird name to have for that move. But I do understand the emailer's point calling someone a girl. Now, I agree. It's the context when you want to have them viewed as women as important. This to me is just sort of like a bad nickname all around, and
yes,
needs to
yes.
be something a bit just better. Also, it's weird. It's like, so she has torn her ACL twice, I believe, and so she has a more devastating shining wizard. Is it supposed to be kind of like the steel plate in Lex Luger's arm, that because she's had reconstructive surgery, she can knee
yeah.
people in the head harder than those who haven't? It's just, they should just think of something different.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and he says, did that seem odd to you that Kevin Owens suddenly bought into Jey Uso right before walling off the air? What was the impetus for such a rash change in position? They had a match and lost. It's not as if Jey went through some moral conundrum and did the right thing as to reinforce KO's faith that Jey had truly changed. I'm hoping that this is a bit of a red herring and that Kevin Owens isn't as bought in as it appeared, or I'd be very disappointed in skipping steps in this storytelling here. No, I mean, great point. I mean, I think we mentioned it earlier. The announcers, you know, underlining that just because Kevin Owens had a hard fat match with Jey where Jey didn't grotesquely cheat should not mean that Kevin Owens forgives him for everything he's ever done. That it seems like Kevin Owens wouldn't be swayed that easily. Chris, anything to add to that?
I wonder if Kevin Owens is going to watch the show. One of the things for me that's very weird about watching Raw is the timing of their interviews and entrances. And right before the main event, Drew McIntyre and Jey Uso looked like they were going to fight, and they were broken up by Sami Zayn, and immediately after that, it cut to Kevin Owens walking to the ring. They played his music. So is Kevin Owens going to watch back and see where was, you know, why Sami Zayn, why aren't you like right next to me, or why are you not right behind me? We're about to come out for this big tag team match. It's very important for us. Instead, you're trying to save Jey Uso from a beating, which, hey, maybe if Drew McIntyre beats him up, it's easier for us to win the titles. So maybe I'm reaching there on that, but I think there has to be something more than, oh, they had a hard-fought match, which they lost, and now I accept you. I mean, maybe if Owens and Zayn had won, he could have been benevolent in victory, but losing and then just being like, oh, all's forgiven, it doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, I assume there's a reason they did it, and we don't know what that is yet, but I don't think it's likely they're going to come up with a good reason. And he finally says, I'm really excited for the premieres of SmackDown and Raw. I've been waiting for both shows to come back for some time now. As always, love the show and go VIP. I see what he did there. I mean, it is sort of a silly gimmick to make it seem like something new is happening. It's an excuse to have, you know, make a show feel a little more special than another show, but than all the other shows. But there is nothing. I mean, if they debut a new logo or new music, maybe that, you know, has some sort of symbolic representation of a new season. But if they just have everything the same, it is just kind of silly. And I think most people see it as just sort of silly marketing. And I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if it's not worth it. Maybe it's a way to communicate to viewers, even if it's silly, that this show will be a little more special than most. And shows that are framed and hyped as a little more special than most tend to do a little bit better in viewership because we're all susceptible to such marketing.
I know they did a better job of having matches for next week because coming into this show, they only had a couple matches announced.
Yes.
At least that's one thing. At least they have, I think, five or six matches announced for next week. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely loaded the show. I mean, if a season premiere simply means it's September or October and we've sort of arbitrarily decided to call it a season premiere, but when we do call it that, we give you a loaded lineup ahead of time, at least there's some meaning to it, even if it's, you know, clearly just a transparent marketing label without any meaning beyond that. All right, Azan in St. Louis says hello, waiting Chris. What are your thoughts on WWE doing more heel-heel and face-face championship matches on TV lately? I say it's a smart move with TV ratings and breaking away from the formula. I don't think you want to break away from the – I don't think you want to have a face-face match or heel-heel match because you think it'll draw ratings and break from the formula. I think you do it because it's a convenient time to tell – it makes sense because of a larger story arc you're telling. Tegan Nox got no reaction during ring introductions, and the crowd was – into Becky, but not really, didn't feel Becky was threatened or was fighting against somebody they didn't like, and it took heat away from the match. The crowd for the triple threat match at Fastlane with Charlotte, they were booing Charlotte, they were cheering the heel in Io Sky, and they were, you know, just largely ambivalent throughout the match. To me, the heel-heel and face-face matches, the crowd reactions to them, to me is more evidence that they should only do them if they feel it's a necessary step to get from point A to point C, or because they're completely out of ideas and they just need an inferior type of match to fill some TV time. But if it's not a step in a chapter, or it's not admitting that it's just an excuse to have a novel match that isn't really a feud, they shouldn't be doing it because it doesn't work. The way WWE presents their characters and their show, It almost, unless it's like this mega dream match, you know, at a major show, which of course is an exception to the rule for obvious reasons. If it's not that, you end up with inferior crowd reaction. You end up with ambivalence, and I just don't think it works. So I would say don't do it. And the formula is a formula for a reason. And unless WWE completely overhauls their presentation of what they're doing, they ought not do it very often because evidence is in this week. The crowds weren't reacting to it the way that they should. I think the main event on Raw worked because everybody's into it because there's a storyline of KO doesn't trust Jay and Sammy and KO deserve a match, but there's a reason it was thrown together and announced on Raw, and now they're moving past it because it's a one-off because you can't really do a full-fledged feud with it, but it was a way to fill a main event spot on a week because they're always looking for something that they think can hold an audience in that final spot. And in that case, it was sort of a one-off that served a storyline purpose of KO and Jay, even though we can't figure out why, ending up with KO deciding he trusts Jay now because they had a nice, clean match. Chris, your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I think really the main event works because those are four wrestlers who WWE have spent a lot of time in, vested in, and so when they put them in a main match with the tag team, Rhodes and Uso just winning the tag team titles, the crowd is into it because they came out before, they had an interview, they challenged them, and they had the match about an hour and a half later. I think the issue with the women's match, as I said earlier, is the crowd wasn't behind Tegan Nox. Again, she's not a heel, so she's not someone that's going to get booed for maybe cheating against Becky Lynch or taking shortcuts. Instead, she's just a baby face we like less. And I think for a crowd, it's really hard to get behind someone who doesn't have the history and is not as popular as the person they're wrestling. There's nothing, and there's no reason to boo her. So I think part of it is you can have two very over or very popular baby faces wrestle each other because people are into both sides. But if you have someone who's not yet quite that over, just putting them in a match because they won another match a week ago isn't really going to get a big crowd reaction because the crowd just doesn't believe in them yet.
Azan also wants to know, do DIY have the potential to have a lasting impact on WWE's mainstream audience like New Day and the Usos? Too late for that, even if it's not, even if it was earlier, do you think that was a possibility? Are they that good on the national stage, or were they just big fish in a small pond and they're going to be exposed as such here in this context, Chris?
Well, I think this is kind of the, goes back to the comments I made earlier. If you have a proper tag team division with actual tag teams having tag team feuds, there's a way that they could actually stand out, because they were a good tag team in NXT. If they're just going to be fodder for the main event tag team you've thrown together for the next few months, then they're not going to stand out. I think I'll be intrigued to see how their feud with Imperium goes, you know, win or lose, how they are presented. You know, they've obviously already been attacked, so what is their comeback? How are they going to respond to that? I think that will be really a good test to see kind of how WWE views them.
Yeah, so we already covered this, but I'll read it. He goes, what do you think of the spotlight video on Ludwig tonight? He's been one of WWE TV's MVPs this year, in my opinion. We already talked about him, but yeah, he has been one of WWE TV's MVPs this year. Anytime he wrestles, it's a good match, and he's really good. And I'm glad that, you know, he needs some intangibles, or not, he needs some other traits to be worth putting a focus on, because a lot of people have good matches but aren't marketable at a higher level beyond that. But he is, I think. And yeah, he has been so good on TV, it does seem like he's getting recognized for that and perhaps on his way to being rewarded with a bigger push. Do you agree with the framing, Chris? He has been a TV MVP?
Definitely. Anytime he's been on, he's been very intriguing as a character. And I know we went over his match record, not so great, but his character work's been really good, and that might lead him to have a better match record. But I think they have to decide if he's going to be – I think it would probably benefit him to have Imperium as a tag team, have him spotlighted for a little bit, and then maybe have him break off as opposed to just doing it now, because it could be very easy with him getting lost in the shuffle. I think a lot of times tag teams have helped. Sometimes one wrestler they really want to get over, they put him in a tag team with a tag team over, then split them away. I think that might help him a bit more than just sort of making him a single, just because of the Gunther factor still there, and they're going to have to deal with that at some point.
Okay, let's just kind of round out with some stray thoughts on Raw that we haven't gotten to with calls or emails. Chris, anything in your notes or on your mind that you want to bring up?
Well, I already brought up the Kirk Cousins joke, which is I really wanted to bring that up. I liked that we didn't mention the three-way for the Intercontinental title match between Ricochet, Bronson Reed, and Chad Gable. And the thing to me that was odd was Nakamura attacks Ricochet before the match, which is one of my pet peeves in wrestling, that he's attacked before the match and that he wrestles anyway, so he's at a disadvantage. Though he wrestles the match fine, he doesn't really slow up at all until he misses a move off the top rope, hurts his knee, and that leads to the finish. And to me, I understand why Nakamura attacked him to kind of give him the out of for losing, but he didn't wrestle like someone who was hurt. And sometimes I think in, you know, TV wrestling, it's like, well, this match has to go however long that match went, maybe 8 or 9 minutes. It would have made a lot more sense if, you know, Bronson Reed just shoved Chad Gable like out of the ring and just like hit a tsunami splash on Ricochet and beat him in a minute because he was attacked by Nakamura, as opposed to having this long match, which shows that the attack was kind of meaningless.
Yeah, no, I think that's a pertinent point. They're inconsistent, but better about that, selling attacks and turning that into a storyline. This felt like they had two separate things going. One established that Ricochet has a reason to want a feud with Shinsuke, but we also want to have a good match where he seems like he has a chance to win. And so those two things were a bit incongruent or incompatible, incongruent in execution because they were incompatible. Bronson Reed winning sets up a compelling, intriguing, I think that's a good adjective that Barrett used, match on Raw next week. What do you think about that? And when we talk about heel-heel, face-face matches, that is one that is scheduled but hasn't happened yet. Is that just to create a novel match? Is it to give Bronson credit, ability by competing with Gunther in a more like being more competitive than so many others, even in losing? Is it a hint of trying to turn Gunther babyface by having Bronson seem like more of a heel in that match, or vice versa? Do they kind of lean Bronson being the heel and Gunther being more the babyface? There's all kinds of things that can happen here. I am assuming, and I don't want to judge yet, that they're doing it more than just, oh, we need a compelling match on Raw next week. Because if you overdo the heel-heel matchups, you're going to end up having the awkwardness of fans who are expected to boo someone for good reason 50 weeks out of the year, 2 weeks out of the year, having to decide to sort of plug their nose and cheer them. And I just think once you start cheering somebody because they're the lesser of two evils, it's a little bit harder. It's a break in the continuity of just always disliking them. And I know that happens in sports all the time. You know, I want to see the Eagles lose, or I want to see, unless they're playing the Cowboys. You know, people have that kind of thing going. And maybe you can get away with that now and then, but I think they might be overdoing it if they're just doing it for the novelty of it. Chris, what do you think they're up to here?
Yeah, I'm thinking there has to be a storyline reason for this that will take place at the conclusion of the match. I feel that the heel, Gunther, my guess is going to get more of the babyface reaction just because he's been the champion for so long and he's a bit more popular than Reed. And they'll have this sort of, you know, people love now or make a big deal about, you know, big men hitting each other so they can make reference to that. I really typically don't like the heel versus heel dynamic because I think people, like anything I always say about wrestling, you want to give someone people something to root for, and there isn't much to root for between these two, but I think that it's going to be a lead to a storyline, and I think that it'll be a good match, but I think Gunther will end up coming out on top, and I also think he'll be a little bit more of the babyface in the match.
Very good. Anything else, Chris? I'm not sure that I have anything else that I feel the need to comment on or bring up at this time.
No, I think that's all that I have.
Cool. Well, thank you. Fun conversation, Chris. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope you feel better.
Yeah, I hope so too. I wasn't sure I'd make it over an hour and a half into the show and be coherent and have a voice and energy, but I held on. So we'll see how I do once we end the show and then I just crash. Thank you. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our callers and emailers. And we'll talk to you, everybody, later this week. Special Wade Keller post show Tuesday night edition after Dynamite tomorrow night. And then the flagship on our Blue Logo show on Wednesday. Take care, everyone.